Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, how are we doing this week?
You know,
I feel obligated. Are you staying cool?
Not bad at all. We do have the air conditioning working, which is a beautiful thing. And our family is getting ready for our annual weekly vacation down in North Carolina. So other than scrambling around trying to get everything done ahead of that vacation, all is good in the world of Ironhead here.
Very good. Glad to hear that. I'm jealous of you taking the week off. But you're still going to call in for our show next week, right? I mean, you can't be doing anything more important than our show, right?
Well, we're certainly trying, Jim. I can't imagine there would be any connection. Oh, did I freeze up, Jim? are you getting it? It might not work. I'm not sure, Jim. We'll see.
Well, we'll have to make do for 1 week without you. I'll leave you alone. Let you take your vacation and enjoy yourself on the beach with some nice drink with a straw and some fruit in it, Jeff.
That is the plan, very much so.
Remember, plan your work your plan. All right, sounds good. Let's get back to our topic. Let's talk about some Penn State football. And Jeff, as the season just sneaks up on us so quickly, we're really not that far away from fall camp starting. But what I wanted to do with you is I wanted to take a look at the schedule, where the Nittany Lions are, and it's kind of reaching that point where people are coming out with their predicted finishes and all. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is taking a good look at the schedule. First of all, just in general, things fall pretty nicely for the Nittany Lions, I think.
I do, too. One of the things that we've been talking a little bit on the Goon and Ironhead show about over the last couple of weeks, and I'm just curious as to how these things play out. But most of the odds makers in Vegas have the Penn State number at 9.5. As far as the over-under win total. I think there was one place that had it at 10.5, but most places seem to have settled on 9.5 as the, that tipping point for Penn State, meaning either 9 or 10 wins. And that's not terribly unreasonable, I think, going into it with two new coordinators, losing some of the guys they did to the NFL draft last year, et cetera, et cetera. But what I find curious about that number is that then those same Vegas odds makers or similar Vegas odds makers, if you go through game by game now, the schedule, Penn State is favored in 11 of the 12 games. The only game Penn State is not the favorite in, as we sit here right now, is the Ohio State game. And Penn State, I think it's a 5.5 point underdog at home to Ohio State. I just find that interesting. The odds would tell you that, well, that would look like 11 wins, and yet 9.5 is where they're setting the number. And again, I don't think 9.5 is an unreasonable number, but I also do think Penn State is rightfully, as we sit here right now, not knowing all of the variables that will go into game weeks during the season, I think Penn State is rightfully favored in 11 of those 12 games. I would agree that Ohio State is the only game on paper where I'm like, I don't know that Penn State can match up there talent-wise, although Penn State historically matches up, whether they have the talent or not, very well, just not quite well enough to win very often.
I know I told you there would be no math here, Jeff, but as a guy who took one statistics class over 40 years ago, the way the math actually works is if you're favored to win, 11 out of 12 games, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what the odds are that you will. Like, pretend you're going to be undefeated. You're favored in every single game, but you're favored by less than a touchdown in every game.
Right.
Chances are you're going to trip up somewhere. So I think it's with, you know, the understanding or the thought that they will probably lose to Ohio State. I think the feeling is, you know what, with road games at West Virginia, USC, Wisconsin, someone will trip them up, even though they're favored in all three. We kind of think they'll win two out of those three, perhaps. And I, it was interesting. You talked about most places have them at 9.5 wins, which I think is the logical number for any Penn State team every year. It seems like 9.5 is the right number. And I think at 9.5, I would bet the over. At 10.5, I don't think I'd be betting the over. Okay. And I think 10 wins, typically the odds maker, they want to put the over under wins on a half game. So you're going to win or lose. But if there was ever a team that I think should be right on the number 10, it's this team.
I agree with you there. I think that is the number, and I understand why they do the half, but I'm with you. I think 10 is the number because, again, I think it's on paper, it should be 10 or 11 wins for this team, and certainly not inconceivable that they could lose three games there or even four, depending on how things, you know, ultimately play out. But, you know, with those numbers, and I know you were talking just more general in terms of the wins versus the individual game odds. Obviously, the exception to that is the Steelers. They never lose a game that they shouldn't lose during their regular seasons. But I understand, generally speaking, what you were saying.
Well, it's interesting, the premise of winning the games you should. And I hadn't thought about this. And earlier in the week on a show with our buddy, our mutual buddy, Chris Buchanani, Chris talked about their improvement last year was there wasn't that trip up game where they lost the game that they should have won. You know, you think back to losing to Pitt, to Minnesota, to Michigan State a couple times, to Illinois. They didn't have that game and they were, you know, 10-0 when they won. I think the difference in this year's schedule is last year, I think all of us just said, this is a 10-2 team. Hopefully they win one of those two against Michigan and Ohio State, but they should not lose any of the other 10. This is one where all of a sudden, and I think you brought them up, the Wisconsin, West Virginia, and USC road games, those are the ones that concern me. I'll put it this way. Which of those three concerns you the most?
Well, and just to back up real quick, Jim, because James Franklin, you know, did have a history of losing a game, as you pointed out, but that's 2 years in a row now where Penn State has not lost a game where they were favored. So, you know, that's back-to-back seasons where it, you know, feels like they've largely corrected that, which is, again, why I think it's interesting when you look at these games going into the season. As we sit here right now, the game that actually, I think the game that probably worries most Penn State fans the most is not the game that worries me the most of those three. My guess is most fans would circle the USC game in large part because Penn State has not beaten USC in California in either of their histories. But, and I'm not saying that game is of no concern. To me, the Wisconsin game is the greater concern for a couple of reasons. One is I think if you come off that win over USC, I think you're riding high. I know they have the extra week to get ready for Wisconsin, but that extra week has not been a great omen or predictor of success. I think we could fairly say for James Franklin during his tenure, but also, and again, I do think it helps. So at the end of the day, truthfully, as we sit here right now, I'm actually not all that worried about any of the three. I think Penn State has a very good chance of running the table, and that's kind of what I'm expecting in those three games, in part because it does play out the way you would want it to, I think, if you're Penn State. Of the three, I think West Virginia is the most manageable. The possible exception there would be, oh, man, if it's a night game in Morgantown. Oh, lo and behold, it's not. It's a noon kickoff. And James Franklin, if you look at the track record, the opening games have been pretty good, even against good competition, even against good competition on the road. So I think that bodes well. I also think Penn State's just a better team. I think West Virginia has a terrific quarterback, and I think because of that they have a fighter's chance. But I like Penn State's chances a lot. I think Penn State will be dialed in on that USC game. Kind of same thing. I want to see how the quarterback play develops there at USC. That could be a more dangerous game for sure than what I think it will be right now. And then with Wisconsin, what worries me more about it is that you do have Ohio State that following week, and I think a lot of people are going to be chirping in the ears of the players, and not that you're going to take Wisconsin for granted, but you know that you have the game of the year a week away. But with the way the schedule plays out, again, having that bye week, I think, is huge, Jim, because I do think, again, James Franklin has done a very good job over the years, and especially in the last two seasons, of getting his team dialed in for the 1-0 philosophy. And so, you know, at the end of the day, Wisconsin still worries me the most, but my expectation is Penn State goes 3-0 in those three games.
I would like to think they will, too. You bring up the playing Wisconsin, then Ohio State back-to-back. I'd be more concerned about Wisconsin if they played them after Ohio State. We remember the Michigan State after Ohio State games, right, Jeff?
For sure. And to that end, Jim, so the game after Ohio State, like, oh, that could be a letdown emotionally either way. It's a Washington team that is so depleted, Jim. Again, maybe they'll surprise, and by that time of the season, we'll have a different sense of them. But as we're going into this season, I mean, I think the Huskies are probably in for as big a drop-off or more of a drop-off than any Big Ten school from last season to the upcoming one.
I think so too. And by then, the difference, say, like West Virginia has Penn State first. West Virginia is going into that game undefeated and prepped and ready, whereas Washington, by November, their season may have already played out in a way that they didn't want. But I'm curious also, just speaking of this scheduling, how those Pac-12 teams will deal with Big Ten schedule week after week. I'm going to ask you about that, Jeff, when we get back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State's upcoming 2024 season, taking a look at the schedule. Before we get back just to Penn State, we were talking about getting Washington in November, the week after playing Ohio State. And is that the time when, you know, Penn State traditionally has had some issues, those games after Ohio State? In fact, I believe it was back-to-back years they lost to Michigan State after losing heartbreaking games to Ohio State. But let me just ask about the other side of the equation. Washington as a Pac-12 team, there's always this sense, Jeff, that the Pac-12 is a finesse league, or was a finesse league. The Big Ten, kind of brutal. It's physical. You could play, you know, you could talk about Illinois not being a great team, or Iowa with no offense, or even and Wisconsin fitting into that kind of mold, but they'll beat you up. They'll play physical Do you think that's going to have an effect on these, you know, USC? Oregon is just that good. I'm not sure they would have any problem. But I wonder about, like, USC and Washington.
Yeah, I wonder a little bit, too. So I think USC is probably pretty well adept to handle it as well, at least on the offense, like their offensive line. Now, the defense, just in general, I still have a lot of questions about with that program and certainly coming off of last season, how quickly they can try to rectify things. I think overall, I do think the physical play of the Big Ten, I think it'll be a bit of an adjustment for those four schools. But it, as you said, I don't know that it's going to be a huge adjustment for Oregon. And Oregon, to me, at least for the upcoming season, is the one that I think you more accurately would use as the barometer, because they, of the four teams that are coming in, I think they clearly are the best position to have success right out of the gates and, you know, could challenge Ohio State for conference supremacy right out of the gate. And I think that game on October 12th will be fascinating. I think the way their schedule works out, at least in terms of the physicality, probably works out pretty well to their advantage as well, because again, they have an extra day from the Michigan State game to the Ohio State game. So if that is an especially physical game with Michigan State, you have the extra day of rest. You're at home for both of those games. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that they're just going to be a worn out team, not ready to go for Ohio State, or not able to be ready from a physicality standpoint for the Buckeyes. And then kind of same thing, you know, I guess maybe if you get into the November portion of the schedule where they have Michigan and then a couple of weeks later they're, you know, at Wisconsin, maybe that stretch of games with Maryland in between there would be a bit of a concern in terms of how they hold up physically. But while I think it will be different and it will be an adjustment, I don't know that it's going to be like, man, a team that, you know, you think would go 10-2 all of a sudden is 7-5 here because they just can't withstand that physical nature of Big Ten football. I think it's going to be more maybe a game here or there where it's like, oh, yep, that previous week's game took a little bit of a toll on this team or that team. I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. But I do think you're going to see some impact in some situations where the schedule will catch up with a couple of these teams anyway.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think Oregon would be affected by it. They're just too talented. But it's some of those other teams. And USC, I wonder about a little bit. Now, they typically go, you know, they play like a Notre Dame every year. So they've at least get a physical game there with their in their out of conference schedule. So just curious about it. One more question on this. You mentioned the Ohio State Oregon game, which I think a lot of people look at as the game of the year in the regular season, or at least in the Big Ten.
Yeah,
might be. Penn State fan, who do you root for?
Boy, that is a great question, Jim. So where I'm at on it, and I don't know that I'll actually, like intellectually, where I'm at is you need to root for Ohio State if you're a Penn State fan, because one, you don't get a shot at Oregon, so you don't get to, at least in the regular season, you don't get a chance to have self-determination there. So you want that Ohio State game to be as big of a game as you can for Penn State, and really win or lose. You the Buckeyes coming in undefeated means a loss there at home isn't exactly devastating or will be viewed as, you know, some sort of horrendous loss for the Nittany Lions. But also, obviously, if you win that game, presumably, if the Buckeyes are undefeated, they'll be ranked first or second, certainly in the country, and that becomes a huge signature victory for your program. So intellectually, clearly, you need to root for Ohio State. As I'm sitting there watching the game, am I going to be, come on, Buckeyes? I don't think I am, Jim. I think there's an outside chance that if the Ducks score and go ahead late, I may actually get up off of my chair and applaud the effort. And that's, again, wrong in terms of what benefits Penn State down the road. But there's just a certain wiring here, I think, for most of us that are Penn State fans that will make it very, very difficult to openly cheer for the Buckeyes if they do well in that game.
As you were saying, intellectually, and it made me think, Jeff, I think Jeff Byers, I think intellectual.
I'm assuming all of our audience does as well, Jim, and probably 99% of our great nation.
Anyway, yeah, you're right. But what it also leads to, and I want to go through all the games, but it brings up an interesting point when rooting for or trying to figure out what's better for Penn State. I think you're right. It's better for Ohio State to beat Oregon, and it makes the Penn State-Ohio State game bigger. But it also leads to where do you go? I'm not sure what the tiebreakers are like for the championship game. And if you have a situation where, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State all end up with one loss, and Ohio State, they beat Oregon but lose to Penn State or vice versa. So I'm not sure then Oregon and Penn State, how do you do this tiebreaker? But even more so, if there's 3 1-loss teams, do you really want to go to the championship game and have a second loss that where you maybe risk your entry into the college football playoffs?
Jim, I think my understanding with the tiebreaker is if Penn State's involved in the 3-way tiebreaker, the Big Ten office will sit down and figure out which scenario most screws the Nittany Lions, and then they just go with it. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's the way that works.
You know, those tiebreakers, and I can't help but think, remember during the COVID year where they said you had to play a minimum, 6 conference games, and yeah. Ohio State only played 5, but they were undefeated, and Indiana played the requisite number of games. That was the rule. Well, until it turned out, wouldn't we rather have Ohio State go than Indiana?
It was the rule, sure, Jim. Rules are made to be broken, especially by the commissioner's office and by the the league officials. So, that would be interesting to see. I don't know offhand what the – you would think maybe point differential if they all had one loss and it's a round robin or, not a common results. You would think maybe the point differential there in terms of the loss would come into play. But that's a good question. We'll have to look that one up.
Because I think that there's, argument for using, the college football rankings, who was ranked higher, which in that situation, Penn State can't win that.
True enough.
But before I go off too much on this and how the Big Ten conferences run, if you are going to go strength of schedule, one of the things I've pointed this out before, Jeff, is I look at there being 4 strong teams. I want to use the word elite, but I'll use 4 strong teams in the Big Ten.
Yep.
Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan. I think we could all, pretty much agree on those 4. Ohio State has to play all 3 of the rest.
And have to be have to travel to Eugene and Happy Valley.
Yes. Yes. If you're going to go strength of schedule and as a tiebreaker, Ohio State wins. And yes. And they rightfully should.
For sure. No, I mean, there's no doubt about that.
But that also you know, lends itself to the conversation about Penn State's path there. Again, four good teams of the other three, Penn State only has to play one of them, Jeff. So if they're one of those teams, you know, think about it in terms of how last season played out, where they had to play the two elite teams and lost both those games. This kind of goes back to our discussion that we started with. Based on, you know, strength of rosters, this should be an 11-1 team.
Yeah, and I think when you so Penn State doesn't play Michigan or Oregon, and they have Ohio State at home. Now, it happens to be an exceptional Ohio State team, at least in terms of the talent that they have been able to accumulate. But, you know, that would appear to be the easiest path of the three, for sure, since Oregon and Michigan and Ohio State all play each other. So they have two of the four, at least. And as you said, Ohio State has all three. And like Oregon has Ohio State at home, but then goes to Michigan. And so, you know, there's more difficulty there. I think we started with this, but I do think the schedule, for one of the few times I can recall, plays in Penn State's favor this year.
I think it does too. We're going to pick it up from there when we get back, Jeff, for quarter number three. Stay tuned.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're talking about Penn State's upcoming 2024 season, kind of looking at the schedule, working out some of the quirks of it. And there are quirks. It is a different kind of schedule, Jeff, with no divisions. So you don't have to worry about that championship game being an East team versus the weaker West team. And do you, if you're in the situation where there's three teams with one loss, would you be brokenhearted if Penn State didn't go to that conference championship game and just entered the college football playoffs with one loss?
So this is one of, no, I don't think so, but this is one of the things I'm really curious to see what the football playoff committee decides to do with this year, because to me, while you can reward a team for winning its championship game, if that scenario that you're talking about plays out, Jim, like, how do you penalize a team for playing arguably the best team in the conference and losing? Let's say it's a close game. Now you have two losses and the other team who's not in that championship game still has the one loss, but never had to show up. I am going to be really curious to see how that is handled. And really, even more so if it is a lopsided game. Like, I think if it's a close game, there's going to be a lot of sentiment. Well, listen, that, you know, if those two teams, like, let's say it's Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State, both Oregon and Penn State lose close games to Ohio State during the regular season, and all three go 11-1. Ohio State gets upset by, you know, Purdue. I don't even know if they play Purdue, but that seems to be their sport on their side over the years. But if they, drop a game somewhere along the way, let's say they lose a close one to Michigan and Michigan loses two or three elsewhere. If Ohio State then, I think if Ohio State wins another close game over Oregon, I mean, you can make the argument, I guess, either way, but I think there's going to be a lot of sentiment toward Oregon to not penalize them because they lost another close game. But what happens if Ohio State plays Oregon and Ohio State this time wins by four touchdowns? Like, I don't think you can not penalize Oregon for that performance, right? And you still have the comparative scores from the regular season. But you ultimately then would be rewarding Penn State, right, for just having the good fortune of not being good enough to be in that championship game by whatever the criteria are that are used. I am really curious to see how that part of this plays out and what the conferences do in terms of lobbying for their teams. Now, I think, you know, in that scenario, at the end of the day, Ohio State, Oregon, and Penn State, all with one loss during the regular season, they're all headed to the playoffs. The seeding will matter. I understand that. I'm not saying that's not going to be relevant arguments and discussion. But more compelling to me is, okay, if you have, let's say Ohio State goes undefeated and you have three two-loss teams in the Big Ten and you have, you know, three two-loss teams in the SEC, and at the end of the day, somebody's getting left out of the playoff picture. That's where I think then it becomes really interesting stuff as to how much are you going to penalize somebody for a poor performance in the championship game and reward teams for not playing in that championship game of their respective conference. And in particular, we're talking about the Big Ten and the SEC.
Well, Jeff, I think it still has to be taken into consideration. I don't think you could say, well, say it's Ohio State, Oregon in a rematch, and Ohio State beats Oregon, whether they beat them in a close game or beat them badly. You've got to – it's part of Oregon's resume. I look at it almost like an out-of-conference game where one team might play three directional schools that are all walkovers. Meanwhile, USC is playing LSU. Michigan is playing Texas. If Michigan loses to Texas, and you know, that's part of their resume.
Right.
Well, gee, Jim, they played a tough team. Nobody else played someone like Texas. Well, sorry. If you want to get rewarded for the win, you take the punishment for the loss. Now, I give those teams credit for scheduling that game, and we'll give them lots of credit for winning that game, but it is still part of the resume. So that's why, you know, I shaped the question in terms of, you know, I don't want to say, oh, if you're Penn State into a championship game against Ohio State, I'm going to assume they're going to lose and finish second and maybe get penalized. If not by not making the playoffs, it will hurt their seeding. But I guess I'm also looking at, maybe this is the old traditional Penn Stater versus the traditional Big Ten person. I'm wondering what the value of the Big Ten championship is. You like having that trophy. I get it. I really do. But the real contest is the, you know, the playoffs. And even if you don't win the playoff championship, I think winning a game or two in the playoffs, I'm not sure if I don't value that more than a conference championship, Jeff.
I'm with you. And I think that the, again, we'll have to see how this plays out in the upcoming season. I do wonder down the road whether we even have conference championship games per se. And again, part of this, I'm expecting at some point in the pretty near future, we're going to go back to more regional play. We'll have one or two major conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, will kind of divvy up the landscape. And I think my expectation is that you'll just go into, you'll start the playoffs just with, again, the kind of the regional winners of those two major conferences, and then you'll seed down based on regular season results and conference results, and eventually get away from kind of the conference championship concept, because it's going to be a bigger deal to obviously be in the playoffs and to go win. I think it's going to be much more the NFL model where you're not having an AFC North championship game. You're determining that during the regular season, and then whatever teams based on the regular season results are deserving of the playoffs. I think that's where we're headed. Now, in the meantime, you know, do we have conference championships games for the next, for this year, and that'll be it for the next couple of years, for the next 4 years? I'm not sure, but it feels to me like those conference championship games are going to be short-lived as we go into the 12-team playoff era.
My prediction on this, Jeff, is probably when you have the two best Southeast Conference teams playing or the two best Big Ten teams playing, the loser of that game will still be in the playoffs. Where I think that conference championship game is going to cause heartache is in the ACC and the Big 12, where that additional loss, the winner of that game goes to the playoffs and gets a seeding, you know, a top four seeding. The loser, I'm thinking ACC, Big 12, they can't afford a second loss.
Yep. No, I think that's right. And again, I think all of the conferences, because there are going to be, I suspect, one way or another, we're going to get some pretty good arguments. And that's not necessarily bad for college football, I understand. But I think we're going to get some pretty good arguments on the seeding based on the results of these conference championship games. And I just don't think, and including the Big Ten and the SEC, maybe most especially with the Big Ten and the SEC. And that's why I think we're not going to have these championship games for long, because as much revenue as they bring in and as much excitement as they bring in, they don't bring in as much revenue as the playoffs or create as much excitement as the playoffs. And I think if you can add an extra round of playoff games, that would be the preference, I suspect, of whatever the ultimate ruling organization of college football comes to be. And I don't think that's going to be the NCAA much longer either.
Well, I think they are going to hit 16 teams soon enough, and they'll say, oh, we'll cancel the conference championship games, but have that extra round, you know, the four seeded teams who obviously won their conference championship games, they'll now have to play in the first round. Number one playing number 16, 2 versus 15. And, you know, that will just be part of it. But here's the other thing before we get back looking directly at the schedule again is also another factor in all of this is obviously within the Southeast Conference, the Big Ten, if you're going to that conference championship game, you obviously want to win for obvious reasons. But the other part of it is you get the seeding, you get the bye. But if you are, when I talked about, you don't want to go to that conference championship game and lose in the Big Ten or Southeast Conference. If you're that third team, what you have a shot at, Jeff, is being seeded like fifth or sixth, which I could argue might be the optimal place to be. If you're seeded fifth, your first round is against the 12th team, which is probably that group of five team. Your second game would be 5 versus 4, which is the fourth conference champion, which is the worst of the two between the ACC and the Big 12. There's an argument that being seeded fifth or sixth might be better than seeded first or second.
Yes, which is why I think these championship games are going to be short-lived moving forward. I think my guess is they're already taking a look at that in the conference offices and in coaches' offices across the country. And again, that's just not the position you want to be in, where you're almost rooting against your program to be in a championship event because of the possibilities. Now, I think most of these programs and most of these coaches would tell you, no, we'll take the championship game because we're going to go out and win it. I get that. But again, once the scenario plays out and you are the beneficiary, or you're the team more so if you're the team that goes in and loses that championship game, and then you're looking at a team that you think you're better than that gets rewarded for not playing in that game. I don't think this model of playoffs can move forward for very long.
There's going to be situations like that. That's going to be an issue. All right, we got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're looking at the Penn State football season coming up in 2024. We expanded that a little bit. We're looking at the whole Big Ten. Let's get back to Penn State directly. Look at the schedule. Go through the games real quick. Jeff, let's start opener, West Virginia. I think a lot of the thought is new coordinators. That could create a little bit of a problem. That first game, things aren't settled yet. The other side of the argument is new coordinators. West Virginia hasn't seen a Tom Allen coach defense or an Andy Kotelnicki coached offense. So who gets the benefit there?
At the end of the day, I think this is advantage Penn State because it is the opener. And I go back, maybe I'm putting too much on this, but I don't think I am. James Franklin's approach and this coaching staff's approach to spring football, where they spent so much time trying to make sure they were on the same page and everybody had the verbiage and everything else that they wanted to make sure they were in good shape coming out of spring practice. Just listening to the players, listening to the coaches, it felt like mission accomplished there. I think Penn State, while it lost a lot of talent, there's no question at the end of last year, I just think there is a good track record here with James Franklin in these openers. I think the fact that it is on the road against a good West Virginia team means there's no chance of Penn State overlooking this thing. You know, that 1-0 mentality will very much, I don't think they'll have any problem having that intact. And again, I also... maybe making too big of an issue of this, but I just think that noon kickoff is huge, Jim, versus a night game atmosphere there in Morgantown. I just think all of that bodes well for Penn State. And again, I don't necessarily think Penn State's going to go in there and blow the doors off West Virginia. I think that is a legitimate offense. I do think if Penn State has some opening game issues, it's going to be more on the defensive side, maybe some communication issues with the cornerbacks, maybe not recognizing some things and having an experienced quarterback being able to take advantage of some of those things. But I have such high expectations for this offense, Jim, and I think Penn State is going to come out and put a lot of points on the board in Morgantown and throughout the season.
So you're the one who has all that confidence in the offense. I knew I'd find somebody. next couple games, obviously, the Bowling Green, Kent State. You got to – all right, here was the question that came up last week. I will ask you this. Bowling Green, what is their team nickname?
The Falcons.
Wow. Is that right? I don't remember. I know I had this discussion with Andy last week, and I had to look it up, and now I already forget it. So let's bypass Bowling Green and Kent State. I'm going to assume victory's there. Then it's Illinois. Jeff, when you and I talked about this being the whiteout, potentially, and you, as an insider there at Penn State, you must know everything. Is this going to be the whiteout game? You can tell us. It's just between you and I.
Jim, it is one of the possibilities.
And you can say that with firmly.
My insider knowledge that it is possible that the Illinois game ends up being the whiteout game.
You mentioned going back to Illinois and what they did during the scandal where they showed up on campus. Is that still relevant to anyone besides us old timers, Jeff?
Probably not. But there's enough of us old timers that I think it's worth carrying on the grudge. And again, I fully admit it's a grudge that is ridiculous because none of the people involved, none of them are still there with that Illinois program. But I still hold it against them and the institution as a whole.
Well, I think what some people will remember and are still there is that 53 overtime game where they lost. And
that too.
Interestingly enough, Landon told me he was around when that happened. So he remembers that as such a crushing defeat. So I think that might be the bulletin board material for that game. But I think we both would agree. I'm not seeing Illinois making that one a tough game. At least I don't. I think they'll make it physical, but I don't think after the struggles in the last couple of years that will be the case this year.
No.
Next up, UCLA. I just don't think it's a good UCLA team at all.
I don't either. And you combine that with having to travel across the country, and you know that's obviously a possible whiteout game. If that does end up being the whiteout game, I give UCLA like a 1% chance of winning that game because I just think that spectacle. If you've not been in that environment, and they haven't. That's just such a different environment than anything else that they will see or will have seen in their collegiate careers. But even without it, again, it's a long trip. It's, you know, UCLA, I think, is going to struggle to be an above 500 team. And I just can't. I see potential pitfalls here. Those first five games, Jim, I do not see any of them being one of those pitfalls. I think the first real threat to me, and that three-game stretch, you know, in October 12th through November 2nd there with USC, Wisconsin, Ohio State, like that is the stretch to me that will determine how this season ultimately turns out.
I don't have USC schedule in front of me. Do you by any chance?
I do.
Who do they play before they get to Penn State? Where I'm headed, is there any chance that could be a battle of the unbeatens?
Yeah, I do think there is a chance. Let's just go back to the beginning here. So they open up against LSU in that, I forget what they're calling it, the game in Vegas. Oh, the Vegas Classic. That's cleverly named.
Isn't that a coincidence? It's being played in Vegas and it's called the Vegas Classic.
Yeah, love when that stuff works out. I couldn't think of it. But yeah, Vegas Kickoff Classic, where they'll play LSU. That's on that Sunday game on September 1st. Yeah. And then they have Utah State. They are at Michigan. They're home with Wisconsin. They're at Minnesota. So I mean, it's possible. I would say it's unlikely that USC is undefeated going into that game, but it's possible. I mean, I don't think the game at Michigan, I think, is going to be a pretty tall order for that USC team. And obviously, I mean, LSU will be, I think, kind of a toss-up game. And, even Wisconsin. Actually, they're going to Minnesota. It'll be interesting. I could see USC having a losing record going into that game. I think it'd be hard pressed to get through that stretch undefeated.
That sounds like two losses to me, LSU and Michigan.
Yeah.
Then the following week, as you said, it's at Wisconsin. what's Wisconsin's schedule look like prior to that game?
Yeah, Jeff? So Wisconsin, did I bring them up? Hold on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought maybe you had
an entire Big Ten schedule in front of you.
No, I had, doggone it, that's the one team I didn't bring up, and I thought I did, and I don't think I have them here. Hang on, give me just a second.
While you find that, what I like is when it turns out, even if teams are playing cupcakes until then, I like it when it's like two undefeated teams or maybe one team has a loss. It just makes the feel of the game bigger, and I enjoy that. So that's why I was curious who Wisconsin played prior to that game.
Yep. So they have Western Michigan, South Dakota, Alabama. So obviously a 3-0 start. then USC, then Purdue, Rutgers, Northwestern. So they actually could be a one-loss team going into that. I think one or two losses. I think that USC game at USC would be, a tough one for them. I'm going to go ahead and count. Although they have Alabama at home. I mean, I guess I wouldn't rule out the possibility there, but that feels like a one or two loss team by the time Penn State gets to them.
It does. And then the following week is Ohio State. That's the big one. But I don't look at it quite the same as I did last year, where you had two games, Ohio State, Michigan. Boy, you got to win one of those two. This one, if they could win the rest, I think the expectation level is low enough this year. You go in without those expectations, but if you come out of it with a loss and still have a chance to go 11-1, you feel pretty good, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree. It's almost, to me, it's kind of a house money game. Now, obviously, that's if you're taking care of business going into it, and certainly even if Penn State has one loss, I think if that's a competitive game, which it usually is, certainly at Beaver Stadium it has been, I think you can live with that, even if that is a second loss, if you're a Penn State fan. And obviously, if you can pull the upset there, I suspect there will be a few libations had in downtown State College that evening.
Yes, a few. And then the following week, Washington, I want so badly to feel like they're decimated. They lost so much talent. But you still have to respect the team that made it to the national championship game last year.
No, yeah, and it's not that I think Washington's going to fall off the face of the earth. When I said I think they're going to have the biggest fall, again, they had a terrific season last year. So it's almost inevitable that they would drop off some. I just think they lost so much talent. Now, that being said, I'm just looking at their schedule real quick. They could easily go 5-0 to start the season. They have Weber State, Eastern Michigan, Washington State, Northwestern, and at Rutgers. I don't think that's going to be a gimme for them, but certainly possible to go 5-0 there. And then they have Michigan at home, and then at Iowa, at Indiana, home with USC before they're at Penn State. So, I think best case scenario, maybe two losses.
All right, Jeff. And then I'm going to assume wins with Purdue, Minnesota, and Maryland to finish the season 12-0, my friend. That is it for our show. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Ray Hall Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com.